championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel, so the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform. Today we're going to be going over the La Tech win, Texas wins, in DKR. First 1-0 start to the season under the Tom Herman era, as they beat the Bulldogs 45-14. Going to go into what impressed us, what we thought would impress us but didn't, what surprised us, and what we think needs to be fixed. Talk about what happened with Jordan Whittington as he is out for another 6 weeks. So Texas is down another running back, and how big of a deal is that loss? Then go into the LSU game as we are joined by In the Valley Shooks Posier, I believe is how you say his name. Posier, we'll find out. And talk about maybe one of the biggest games in DKR since we'll talk about that and what's we are expecting from this game and the biggest storylines that are going to be coming with this game. So, Joe, La Tech. Texas starts off the season 1-0 for the first time under Tom Herman. And really just seems like it was Maryland less than it was the Longhorns, as Maryland just beats up Howard, I believe. 79-0 looks nigh unbeatable in week one.
Yeah, it's just their time, no matter who their head coach is. But yeah, it was finally nice to see Texas take care of business in week one. No real existential crises among the fan base as week going 0-1 in a career head coaching debut will do, and you know, as it will also do at the beginning of a second year with even higher expectations. So good to not have to deal with that, and I'm sure it feels better in the program to not have to deal with that and to be really confident and go into this upcoming week with LSU feeling pretty good about themselves, and but still having some things to work on and improve on in order to win the next game.
Right, and especially with the game never really being in question, you go into the second half up, 24-0 or 31-0 at some point. I'm not quite sure when it got out of hand, but it got out of hand, and that's exactly what Longhorn fans are looking for. Finally, Longhorn fans get that one game where, hey, we don't have to worry going into the fourth quarter about what's going to happen. You didn't get that against Tulsa last year. You didn't get that against Kansas or any of the teams you really should have beat last year, or that you did beat, but should have beat by a lot. Finally, you get to put in the backup. You finally get to rest Sam Ellinger and do everything that you're supposed to do in a healthy program.
Right, and yeah, you finally got Casey Thompson, his first career action. The funny thing was Sam Ellinger even talked today. Somebody asked him, like, hey, you're not really used to watching the game from the sideline that much, are you, if you're healthy? It's like, yeah, you're right. It was a little bit of a different experience for me. You also, in addition to getting your starting quarterback out late, and like you mentioned, that's what healthy programs do. They're able to beat down programs and teams that just aren't as talented and can't keep up. You also got to give Zach Shackelford a little bit of a rest and get Derek Kerstetter some time at center snapping the ball. I can't remember if he had very many stretches with the ones, but you got to rest what might be either your most important or second most important offensive lineman and get your backup center some reps too. So there was definitely some, you know, like you mentioned, good programs able to do that. That's just one example of, you know, the experience that a lot of different players were able to get in game one, and including some freshmen, and just bodes well for, you know, having some fresher guys heading into this week against LSU.
Right. So before we get into LSU, let's go ahead and keep on this La Tech game. And Joe, tell me what most impressed you out of this game.
I've got to say it was, you know, the effort on both sides of the line. I thought the defensive line really wreaked havoc for most of the game. At least the starters did. There's a lot of plays I saw from rewatching the game where there's just no pocket, and that's because the three-man front and in addition Joseph Osai just made things impossible for that Louisiana Tech offense. Now they did end up finding you know, that short passes where they're best offensive chance. They found a lot of space in the flat, and you know those are short passes. And you know when you get the ball out quickly, you're able to do that without facing so much of the pressure. But Louisiana Tech barely ran the ball throughout the first course of the game or the first portion of the game because they could not because of what the defensive line was doing. And then, you know, they made things difficult for the offense. That short passing neutralized some of their effect, but overall, that was a position group that was, you know, clearly dominant, I feel like. And then on the offensive line, I think you saw good reviews from, you know, Sam Cosmi, who had a pretty wow block in space on a screen. Zach Shackelford was solid as always. I think there was maybe one penalty or something like that, or I can't even remember a hold or a false start. And I think, you know, I saw a stat from PFF that said I think they gave up just one pressure. So this was the first offensive line group that...
Do they count a sack as a pressure?
Well, yeah, and the sack on third down. But that wasn't essentially, you know, that was as much on the quarterback as it was on the offensive line. So this was a very good group that took, you know, complete control against another team that it should have overmatched. And you got to see, you know, the picture clear up a little bit. You saw that Denzel Okafor was not a starter on the field, that they instead decided to go with Parker Braun at left guard and Junior Ongulau at right guard. And,
hey,
and Kerstetter,
Joe, you were right there, man.
And Kerstetter at tackle. So that group really had their way during the game. They're going to get a much bigger test. Both of them are this upcoming week, but I think they did what they needed to do against Louisiana Tech, and that's where the real talent differential shows up. You know, you can find Adrian Hardy's can end up at places like Louisiana Tech. Meek Robertson's can. You're not getting very many Tavondre Sweats, Malcolm Roaches, Parker Braun's, Sam Cosmi's at Louisiana Tech. And I think that's where, you know, that's where Texas really made sure that the lead they built early was not going to go away.
Yeah, and it was also fortuitous that they didn't face a guy like Jalen Ferguson, who right. was one of the best defensive linemen to go into the NCAA. But yeah, you're not getting many of those guys. And honestly, the dominance on both sides was quite apparent, as you're saying. You missed on a guy, Parker Braun, who, yeah, he didn't make the wild block. He was right next to Sam Cosmi when he was making that wild block, but he did make some crazy downfield blocks later in the game.
Oh, there he was mobile.
Yeah,
for
he's
sure.
He's incredibly mobile. He didn't really lose a step since his days at Georgia Tech, and it really came into focus. They didn't really get a good angle of this on the TV broadcast, but there was one play. It was the underneath screen to Devin Duvernay. What they usually did with little Jordan Humphrey last year, now they're doing with Devin Duvernay. But Parker Braun sticks around and then runs down the field and knocks the crap out of some safety, some poor safety downfield. And my friend and I who are watching it just look at each other like, dang, Parker Braun, man. So you have that from Parker Braun. You have what you talked about with Zach Shackelford absolutely manhandling their nose tackle. While the talent level on the left side of the line was very apparent, there wasn't a drop-off. There wasn't a huge drop-off on the right side of the line, which is what you were fearing, having a guy like Derek Kerstetter out on the right side. You know, he's experienced, so he can take care of himself. Junior Angulau has a great base. He's strong. He held his own. Now, on the other side of the line, like you were saying, they were absolutely dominant as well. I mean, when you take three guys and are able to absolutely stuff five and occupy five, it allows for a guy like Joseph Osai or even Aodele Adeoye to really wreak havoc. And Adeoye, yeah, he did well. He could have done better, but he did well because of the lines in front of him. And it wasn't just like the starters. It was the guys behind that and the guys behind that as well. There was like three deep where you really didn't see much of a drop-off. So there is that I was impressed with. And then Joseph Osai, speaking of him, I was impressed with him. Now, I wasn't surprised by it, but I was impressed with how well he did. And I think I put out a tweet, at least I joked around with the people I was watching the game with, that, you know, screw Sam Ellinger's Heisman campaign. Let's start one for Joseph Osai. After that, what should have been a pick six. But, man, can you imagine? I'm going to call it a pick six because that's sort of what it was. It was a BS call. So it's a pick six in my book. two picks, one fumble recovery, a few tackles for losses. The dude absolutely wreaked havoc across the field. And what impressed me about him was not just that he was great at B-backer, because that was no surprise. You and I have been praising him all offseason long, saying this is the guy who's going to impress coming to the season. What impressed me the most, though, was when they went into their dime package, how he was able to go seamlessly between B-backer to rover. In my film breakdowns that I will be putting out later today, there's a play where I highlight that Joseph Osai is able to dissect, go through trash in traffic, and really fill gaps like you would expect from an inside linebacker. And he's a B linebacker. He doesn't play inside linebacker, but he's able to be versatile enough so that you can play him all across the field. And that's what was really impressive about Joseph Osai.
Yeah, even post-game, it was one of those things I asked him, how's that transition gone? I mean, you've been out there playing rover, you did it in the game. He said it's been difficult. And he gave a lot of credit to Todd Orlando and the rest of the coaching staff, including some quality control and GA guys. But he admitted, you know, this was a bit of a tough change for me. Now, doesn't mean that he hasn't, like you mentioned, done pretty well, and he did that very well, I believe, in his role in the dime package there. But it was definitely a tough change for him, and something so far that, you know, if that's what tough changes are like, just wait till he takes to it. You know, wait till he really understands it.
Right. But his ability to transition well enough into that rover position allows you to get your best 11 on the field. Because honestly, no offense to Dewa, but he is nowhere near as good at his certain position as a guy like B.J. Foster or Chris Brown or Brandon Jones. So getting Joseph Osai on the field so that they can keep one of those guys at that position or at a similar position is so important to the Longhorns' ability to get that best 11 on the field. And that's why his coming out party this year is going to be so important for the Longhorns' defense. Now, Joe, was there anything else that impressed you about this game?
One thing that I did that did catch my eye a little bit was B.J. Foster and DeMarvian Overshone looking okay, looking pretty natural in linebacker roles in the Cowboy package and the eight defensive back package. They were, you know, kind of the interchangeable Rover and Mac, and obviously DeMarvian played enough. He got a tackle for loss or a sack, I believe, and recorded his first career interception. Something a little bit different for both of those guys, obviously. Both have experience playing Joker, but maybe not so much linebacker. It helps that they're in a very specialized role on passing downs. But I thought what they did was pretty impressive. They're asked to do some pass rushing from kind of inside the tackles and drop into coverage a little shallower than what they're used to. I thought they did well with it, and if that's, you know, what that package allows you to do is get all those guys on the field, have them make plays like that. That could be a real weapon when it comes to third and long.
Right. And that overshown package, it basically is, but the Cowboy package is perfectly created for DeMarvian Overshone. I mean, that's where he got his sack. Like you said, that's where he got his pick. It's just built around DeMarvian Overshone. That's basically what allows it to be that 3-8 package. Now, what was something that you thought would impress you, but it didn't?
You know, despite him having two touchdown passes, I think of at least 25 yards or something like that, I was left a little bit unsatisfied by Sam Ehlinger's downfield passing. He does well in the screen game, obviously. Made sure that was a facet of the offense that stuck around with Devin Duvernay. Was accurate on his short passes. I think Colin Johnson, you know, was good on his, and even up to those kind of semi-intermediates with Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay. But there were some downfield shots that he missed. One in particular was one, it seemed like he threw in between Jake Smith, who was fat past the safety that was guarding him, or Colin Johnson past a corner he was guarding. That's a touchdown play. Those guys were both kind of on free releases and had their man beat, and that was a pass that Sam missed. That's the one that really stands out, because that was just, you know, that's two plays in one that was missed. I can't really think of a bunch of successful downfield passing plays. Now, not to take away too much credit, I mean, he did hit Brennan Eagles both those times, and you know, just because that they're open doesn't mean they're not passes you have to make, and he made them. But there were a couple times, you know, another one included is the Colin Johnson almost one-handed catch,
or the one where he missed Duvernay across the middle.
On the near sideline. That was one that, you know, last year he was hitting. That's a downfield pass. The one where he was even rolling out of the pocket where Colin Johnson had to make an unbelievable catch on it. Colin Johnson was pretty wide open and still had to make a very, you know, catch that only Colin Johnson could make on it. So Sam played a really good game. I felt like, you know, 28 to 38, something like that. No picks again. But there were some passes, there were some yards that he left on the field that if you leave those yards on the field against maybe an opponent like LSU, it's a lot more likely to turn into points left on the field instead of just staying yards.
Right. If Texas wants to beat LSU, Sam needs to be able to make that throw to Jake Smith or be able to hit that throw to a wide open Colin Johnson, because that's what you need. You're going to need some of those 50-yard quick hit touchdowns. But you're right. Yeah, Sam Ehlinger just needs to be more consistent. He is, and not to say that he wasn't good, because he did really well that game. But the inconsistency in his throws was what took him from being elite into just a great game. The inability to hit those throws that you're talking about is going to be crucial going down the line when you need to be able to keep up scoring with teams like Oklahoma or Oklahoma State. That's going to be crucial, and especially against LSU here, because they're going to have one of the best defensive backfields that the Longhorns, at least Sam Ehlinger, has ever faced. And they're going to play man, close man, and they're going to be loading the box to make sure, hey, Sam Ehlinger can't run, the running back can't run. They're going to be basically saying, Sam, beat us with your arm downfield. And so Sam's going to need to be able to hit those throws that he did not hit against Louisiana Tech, or it's going to be a long Saturday. You know, that's what we thought would impress us, but it didn't. And that needs to be fixed. So I completely agree with you on that. That was my point as well. So let's go ahead and get on to the next one. What surprised you in this game? I have three things, but what about you?
What surprised me was just how vanilla this game was. Texas did show off the Cowboy package. They did show off Dime. But at the same time, they didn't seem to do anything that exotic out of it, or nothing that, you know, even though they played as many plays as that they did against Louisiana
nothing
Tech.
Exotic out of the 3-8 package.
It just didn't seem like they revealed much on defense, and then they for sure didn't reveal that much on offense. They kept it in 11, like last year, kept it in 11 personnel for most of the time. They changed where some of the people were in that 11 personnel, but they ran basically the same type of inside zone run play, did not get fancy there at all. Had one quarterback run call. Sam Ehlinger revealed that today instead of zero, like he said post-game. He said there was one called quarterback run, you know, let's see. They had those little trick plays with the direct snaps, but maybe that was a shot across the bow as opposed to anything else. Basically, what surprised me was just how vanilla it was. It was really, really vanilla. It looked basically like the same team that Texas was last year. Didn't put anything new on film. And when you have a week two opponent who's as high profile as LSU and as talented they are, and you think you have equal talent, you kind of need to hold on to those coaching advantages. And that's what Texas did without showing a ton on film.
Yeah, and they're able to really rely on the vanilla approach to their game because of how they didn't have major penalties. They had 6 penalties. They had 1 sack. I believe they only had 1 tackle for loss or 1 negative play. There weren't a lot of yards given up, at least not on the offensive side. So they were able to take that vanilla game plan and just use what they have, which is an identity, to just force it down the throat of Louisiana Tech. And that's what you get when you have a guy like Sam Ehlinger. You have talents across the board. You have an offensive line that gives you like 5 seconds to throw the ball. And you just play flawlessly. That's what allows you to do is to have a very vanilla game plan like that. And one thing that surprised me was how they incorporated the run game into this game. Because they want to protect Sam Ellinger. They wanted to at least try to protect their running backs, even though they weren't as successful with it with Jordan Whittington. But what they did to do that is they spread it out. They were trying to make it so that the box wasn't as loaded. So what they did is they used the bubble screens and they used swing passes to extend the running game outside of the A, B, and C gaps to the wide receivers as blockers and get guys like Cosme and Braun, who you know are mobile, out to the edge so that they could extend where they're going. And that's probably what they're going to do against LSU. You probably are seeing a little bit of what is going to happen in the future because LSU is going to stack the box. They're going to try, as I said, they're going to try to make it so that you have to beat them with the arm. So they're going to do that. And they're going to extend the running backs out to the outside where they're not going to be taking huge hits from linebackers or defensive tackles. Instead, they're going to be going up against guys who they're more the same size of, like what they did against Louisiana Tech. So that surprised me. But at the same time, I mean, it makes sense. Another thing that surprised me about this game was the effectiveness of the Cowboy package. And I'm saying it surprised me not because I wasn't expecting the Cowboy package to be ineffective, but because during the game, as I was watching it, I was saying, man, this doesn't look great. You know, there are guys who are running through the same holes. It sort of looked like last year where there's a lot of chaos. And then what that causes is not just chaos for the quarterback, but chaos for your guys. And so there are a bunch of guessing going on. But as I watched the film, no, the Longhorns really created a lot of chaos for Jamar Smith. A lot. And what happened was the times where they did give up on third downs. So when I charted the Cowboy package, they used it, I think, 10 or 11 times. And of those 10 or 11 times, only two resulted in a first down. The two times that it resulted in a first down were not due to the ineffectiveness of the Cowboy package. It was due to individual error. Like when Kobe Boyce decided to start celebrating a pass broken up when he didn't do it, that resulted in a first down and a third down. If he makes the tackle there, what he should have done, there's no first down. And the Cowboy package, again, gets another third down off the field. Next one was DeMarvian Overshown missing a tackle. And that was another big thing that needs to be fixed in this game. We'll get to later. But he missed a tackle, took a bad angle, and that led to a 12-yard run for a first down. Besides that, 80% efficiency with a Cowboy package is something you will take every single day and twice on Saturdays.
Yeah, and that's especially after this was a team that was awful. No, you're not awful. Was well below average at getting the opponent off the field on third down. Maybe this package is a solution to it. You just have to do well enough on first and second down and be playing the right opponent in order to be able to utilize this. But if you're able to use this, get all your best players onto the field and in a package that works for third down and you're keeping it effective, it's going to become a real weapon.
One more guy that surprised me, a guy who I wasn't even really expecting to see the field very much, but Chris Brown. What he was able to do in this game, basically act as a linebacker on the line of scrimmage, was very impressive. His ability to not only get down the field, but to get down the line once he gets downfield and stop runs and pressure the passer, and not only do that, but go backwards and get a pass breakup and stop third downs. And he just made so many big plays. It not only speaks to what Chris Brown did, but the bevy of safety talent that the Longhorns have.
Yeah, that's Chris Brown's a football player. He really showed it this past week, doing, like you mentioned, all over the field, doing a bunch of different stuff, playing a little bit of nickel, playing a little bit of joker, playing a little bit of, you know, free safety, just kind of doing it all and doing it really well. The testament to showing what happens when you're patient, when you redshirt, when you learn and grow in a defense and waiting your turn and taking the most of your opportunity when it's afforded to you. He's a guy that can really, you know, may have flown under the radar a little bit, but he can play ball. And I think he really showed that. And he's a, you know, he may be 5'10", 210, but he's a real versatile piece, and he'll give you 100% effort no matter what position he's playing.
He'll be a case study for the Longhorn coaches to use for guys to say, hey, be patient, This is what you can do if you wait in our system. So the next thing we're going to talk about, the last thing we're going to talk about, is what needs to be fixed, Joe. And I think it's quite obvious what needs to be fixed, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
I think what needs to be fixed on the defense, and this is one thing that I couldn't help but really not notice in the second half, Louisiana Tech was able to attack the flats pretty regularly. They were able to get some intermediate, you know, 6-7 yards, chunks of yardage pretty much not at will, but at a good clip in the second half. A lot of it may have had to do with the safeties being matched up in some sort of kind of semi-man coverage, and when you're playing off and playing at depth as a safety, you're going to give up a cushion that they can take advantage of with some out routes, and that's what they did from time to time. And that just seemed like free yardage. And if that was the case against the Skip Holtz coach team, what's going to be the case against this, you know, Joe Brady, NFL, New Orleans Saints looking offense? Because that was where there's a lot of yardage to be found there. And, you know, if you can just go down the field 1, 2, 3, 4 with these quick passes, that saves your line a little bit for later in the game. And if you need to ice a game out, then here comes your offensive line going downhill on your defensive line that's been trying to rush the passer for 2 seconds the whole game and not really getting anywhere. So I think if they're able to, maybe it's because of the deep vanilla play calling and not wanting to show a lot, but I felt like there was yardage to be found in the flats regularly for Louisiana Tech, and I don't think that's something that LSU is not going to notice.
Right, and I think really what allowed for that to happen is the fact that Texas took bad angles to tackling. They did not wrap up. They did not tackle well, and there was a lot of lack of cornerback recognition in terms of what play calls are in or what they're in and how to play that. And it's important because a lot of times last year, what Todd Orlando did was he allowed some short plays and then one of the guys to focus on coming up and making the tackle and stopping it. What happened in this game was these cornerbacks, they either didn't use the sideline as another defender, or they made a bad tackle, or they took a wrong angle, tried to go where the guy is instead of where he will be, and it caused a lot of these small screen plays to turn into these 8 or 9 yard plays where the yards were allowed. And what happened in the past is they were more sure tackles, and those plays would be stopped at most 5 yards. So you're right. What needs to be fixed here is them to stop allowing these big games. But how you're going to fix that is fixing how they're tackling, how they are approaching the tackling. I don't know how you're going to be able to do that in a week, but they were able to do that last year and the year before that. I remember Malik Jefferson took one of the worst angles to a tackle I've ever seen. And then 1 week later, he made the exact same play look super simple. So it's just fixing little things like that. And then on the cornerback stuff, there was one play where Kobe Boyce thought he was in man when he should have been in a deep zone and went after a screen, which left a guy wide open. Fortunately, Jamar Smith missed the throw for the Longhorns, but you see Kobe Boyce there just palms in the air being like, what's going on here? You need to fix those problems before LSU comes and that Joe Brady offense comes, and because they're a lot more pass happy. The Longhorns are going to feel that because these wide receivers, this quarterback, are a lot better than what Louisiana Tech offer the Longhorns. Now, let's go ahead and get to one of the biggest storylines coming into this LSU game, which is the running back situation for the Longhorns. 2 days ago, Tom Herman let us know that Jordan Whittington is going to be out for 6 weeks due to a sports hernia. Joe, break down, how big of a deal is this?
It's definitely a big deal, and I know it's kind of odd to talk about, Texas lost a running back who's played in what had 2 career catches. It's not so much a big deal in what you're losing with Jordan Whittington, because at this point, he's very gifted and talented, but you don't exactly know what you have there at that position. But you know a little bit more about him than you know about Rashawn Johnson playing running back, or especially David Benda playing running back. So it's not so much that, I mean, you're losing a talent, obviously, and everybody saw what he did in the state title game and what type of player he was in high school. That's still a little bit unknown as to how it translates at running back. But you're going from that to an even more unknown at running back with Rashawn Johnson and then David Benda. And yeah, still, depth just totally gone. Non-existent. It's Keonta Ingram, then a quarterback.
Right.
That's a big deal. It's tough to go through a long amount of time with just two running backs. Somehow Texas managed it last year. And maybe that's all kind of coming back to haunt them this year. You know, they thought they had four. Now they have one. That's definitely an issue, especially when they thought that two was a capability there.
And it's not only that, it's that they're going to be missing that guy, that second true running back, up until Oklahoma State, and maybe even beyond that. And you won't really have good depth past the Oklahoma game. So that's what you're missing here. It's not just, hey, this is going to hurt a lot for LSU. It's going to hurt down the line, down the season.
Yeah, this is not sustainable at all. You're giving yourself a chance to beat LSU, I guess a little bit more so, because this is the first time you're having this problem. It's only going to get worse as the season goes on, most likely. So maybe you can pull all the strings right and make things go the right way with running back. But this is a major concern. This is a problem that there's no way to really speed up people's timeline as far as health. But it kind of seems like Daniel Young may be the first one back of all these timelines, and you need that to start happening, because, man, there's a problem if anything were to happen to Keonta Ingram.
Right. And to stop us from chugging the bleach real fast, let me go ahead and say, for this LSU game, count Sam Ehlinger as a running back. Depth to that running back position, because what happens in these big games of Sam Ehlinger is basically the shackles are thrown off of him and saying, hey, we're going to throw you into the run game. We're going to allow you to attack in the run. Like you said, he only had one designed run in that Louisiana Tech game. In this game, you probably see him run 20 times in the game. Maybe 25, given the running back situation for the Longhorns here. But usually, the Longhorns open up the playbook for Sam Ehlinger in the quarterback run play when the Longhorns are going up against a bigger opponent, which they are. And let's go ahead and get into that here. LSU is coming to town. It's College Game Day. All the LSU fans are coming in, and boy, I don't think Longhorn fans are ready for the rush of LSU fans that are coming in. I think it might be the biggest fan invasion in Austin since the Longhorns played A&M. And even then, A&M was never as good as LSU is now when the Longhorns are playing them, maybe in the 90s. But still, I don't think any Longhorn really is going to remember an invasion of Austin like this since, I don't even know. And this might be the biggest game since, Joe, you and I were talking before the show, like Mizzou in was it 2008? Or Texas Tech in 2005? I don't think there's been a game this big in DKR in quite a while.
Right, even the big, you know, West Virginia game in 2012, Texas was still kind of figuring itself out. Notre Dame in 2016, we know what happened after that. And there were very limited preseason expectations for Texas. They were 6-7 and 5-7. Getting a new offensive coordinator, it was important, but it wasn't as important as two top 10 teams going at it. When both think they're at a certain point on their program ascendancy cycle, this is a proving ground for both of them. One will say, yeah, we're on our way to where we really want to be. And then the other will think, nope, we're not there as an elite program quite yet. Still have some work to do.
Right. It kind of reminds me of 2006 when Ohio State came to Austin. They're both ranked quite high. This is Colt McCoy's freshman year. Texas is just coming off a national championship. And Ohio State has national championship aspirations. You're seeing, okay, hey, where are these programs at right now? Texas didn't look terrible, but they didn't look great against Ohio State. But the Ohio State crowd came in, and they were feisty, to say the least. Yeah, this is the biggest game in the Longhorns in at least a decade. And that's why the College Game Day is coming. That's why it's been hyped up over the entire offseason. And LSU is just down the highway from Austin. So where, you know, there's going to be an invasion. There's going to be a lot of people. That's why the tickets are selling for over thousands of dollars at this point. So Joe, speaking of all this, what are you expecting out of this game from the Longhorns?
I'm expecting them to come out and look like they do against other ranked opponents. It's just something that they do. They play inspired. They play pretty inspired at home, especially when they have the big crowd behind them. That's something we saw, honestly, against USC last year. We saw it against Iowa State. And saw it against West Virginia, even though it didn't result in a win. I'm expecting the team to come out pretty much on fire. I think it'll be kind of a stalemate feel out, you know, first couple drives, maybe a field goal, maybe a punt. I don't expect the first team to score right away. And then from there, it's going to come down to coaching. I feel like the talent level is pretty equivalent. Maybe not at each position, but just kind of across the board. These are two teams that have recruited really well and feel pretty good about the top of their depth charts. I'm expecting this it's going to be a really good game. I don't know if there's any other way to really put that. I think it's going to be really evenly matched. And I think you're going to see each team try to win in the way that it knows best. You're going to see quarterback runs and passes set off that quarterback run. You're going to see a healthy, you know, I expect a little bit of a run game from LSU considering their back talent, but they're committed to this offense and they got a smart guy running it and they've got what appears to be now a capable quarterback running it. So this may look like a little bit of a Big 12 game with some big, you know, elite athletes on the field, but I think it's going to be a close game where each kind of plays into the hands of the other at some points.
Right, we're about to be joined by an LSU expert, but I think what you're going to see from the LSU side is, as I said, them stack the box, say, hey, beat us with your arm on defense. And on the offensive side, they're going to try to take advantage of Texas's lack of experience in the cornerback position by taking advantage of a guy like Kobe Boyce or Anthony Cook or Deshaun Jameson, who all three of them did not look too great against Louisiana Tech. And even maybe even Jalen Green a little bit, because Jalen, you know, try to test him out, because while Jalen Green had some great plays, he also had some plays where, hey, you know, you need to clean this up here. You need to polish this up on this play. So they're going to try to take advantage of the lack of experience and really test out the perimeter, not just with their wide receivers, but with their running backs, which is where they really, this is where they really attacked Georgia State in their last game. It was pretty similar to how Texas tried to get their run game started. They're trying to break in a number of running backs. They have a lot more depth than the Longhorns do, but they really attacked the perimeter. And where do you lack experience? That's on the perimeter. So what the Longhorns going to try to do probably is funnel everything towards the middle of their defense and try to get them into the belly of the beast. It's going to require a lot from Chris Brown. It's going to require a lot from Joseph Osai. It's going to require a lot from B.J. Foster. And so I'm expecting those three guys to either have big games or the Longhorns to have a tough time with that offense. We'll see. If Sam Ellinger can hit the throws, I'm expecting a big game from him. If not, then it's going to be a long weekend. That's what I'm expecting out of this game. And even going into it, if the Longhorns win, it means you have a lot of momentum going into the season. You're a potential playoff contender. If you don't win, oh well, whatever. You still got conference play. There's still a Big 12 championship on the line. And as long as you don't get destroyed, your program is still pretty darn healthy. And honestly, next year is the year where the Longhorns are looking really, really good. So if this game goes well for Texas, awesome. Gravy. But if not, okay. Build off of it.
No, they just didn't want to be there.
They just didn't want to be there. So, Joe, before we invite on Posier from And the Valley Shook, SB Nation's LSU site, what are the three biggest storylines that you are excited about going to this game?
Number one, you got, like I mentioned, this is going to see who's where they expect to be in the program. Is the Ed Orgeron experiment successful? Or is Texas back? That's you're going to determine that pretty quickly. How good is Sam Ellinger? I think this is going to be a game where you're going to need to see the best of him. You saw it against Georgia. You saw it against OU. And if you see it again, there's a good chance that this game could end in a win as well. So what version of Sam Ellinger are you going to get? And then what does this new passing offense from LSU look like against a competent defense that's tasked with stopping the pass almost every single week? you know, you'd think that this would play into Texas' hands, but I think with the talent LSU has at receiver, it doesn't mean that it's all going to go Texas's way. But they should feel confident that, you know, we've seen Oklahoma, and Joe Brady's talented, but, you know, there's a reason he's an analyst at LSU, whereas Lincoln Riley is the head coach at Oklahoma. This is going to be an opportunity for Texas to prove, if you want to come in here and try and fight our type of fight, you're going to get knocked out.
Right. I'm also interested to see how Texas does against Joe Burrow and this new offense. And I say that with these stats in mind. I went through the past 2 years under Todd Orlando and charted how Texas did between pro-style throwers and dual-threat quarterbacks. And there is a stark contrast between the two. When Texas goes up against a dual-threat quarterback, that quarterback usually has a quarterback rating of a 98. Not great. But on the other side of the spectrum, when they go up against a pro-style, 76.5 as a quarterback rating. You can see the massive drop-off. And that's with Taylor Cornelius amongst those pro-style quarterbacks. And he ran 9 times for 54 yards and 2 touchdowns. You take him out, and those pro-style quarterbacks drop to a 72 quarterback rating. That's not great. That is not great. And also, that fourth and third down conversion, with Taylor Cornelius, you have a pro-style quarterbacks converting on around 35%. Without him, 33%. And dual threats converting at a 40% clip. So you can see the contrast between how Texas does against a dual threat and a pro style. I know Joe Burrow can make plays with his feet, but if they can contain him and make sure that he doesn't pull a Taylor Cornelius, then this Longhorn team could really make a name for themselves.
Yeah, it's whether Joe Burrow can execute the Joe Brady offense. I have a lot of faith in the Joe Brady offense because have you seen the New Orleans Saints lately? But they are not the same. I that offense probably has a lot of skill, but we'll see, you know, if Joe Burrow's school record run can be, you know, continued. The offense is proven successful. It's if they have the execution at this point with the guys they have in order to make it work.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on there with that pro style versus dual threat, if that thread continues there. Also, as you said, hey, can Sam Ehlinger take the next step? He has the chance to put his name amongst the guys like Vince Young, Colt McCoy. This is the first stepping stone towards getting to that goal this year and next year. If he is able to do it this year, then boy, he is well on his way to getting his name on the stadium as a, you know, one of the greats. But we'll see. That's a storyline for that could start here if he does well. If he's able to make those consistent passes, if he's able to hit Devin Duvernay streaking down the middle in the seam wide open, if he's able to hit Jake Smith coming across the middle, if he's able to make those throws that he's supposed to make. Another big thing is, as I talked about, how does Texas do, and it goes back to Sam Ehlinger, how is Texas able to do against the SEC? Whether or not you like that narrative, it's a narrative. Texas recruits against LSU, they recruit against A&M, they recruit against Georgia, Alabama, the SEC. If Texas is able to knock off the SEC here, it is a huge card that they can put into their recruiting playbook. Otherwise, it hurts. It hurts you. Against LSU, against trying to break into the state of Louisiana, from keeping LSU out of Houston, from keeping Texas A&M from claiming SEC, from keeping, you know, Georgia saying, hey, we're SEC, and Alabama, we're SEC, and saying, hey, this is the dominant narrative. You can crush that narrative here. But otherwise, if you don't, and Texas is looking great this year, but LSU beats them, that narrative might get stronger. So that's really some of the bigger storylines here going into this game. A lot on the line for both of these teams, a lot on the line for a lot of these players, and a lot on the line for fans. Bragging rights, they're a thing. So we're going to go ahead and bring on, and the Valley Shooks, Steven, and I believe he goes under the name of Posier, right?
It is Steven is correct, but I write under Poser. The Poser spelling is old 80s punk lingo, and I'm a punk fan, from back in the day, and I'm also just
I guess it makes sense that being from Louisiana, y'all spell things wrong or a little iffy. Yeah. So it makes sense.
Exactly.
Plus, we get all those references too.
Oh yeah. So we're gonna reference. We everything we do is public. You know, that's we're gonna run into some germs references.
Being 25-year-olds, we totally get it.
Okay, I'm sure you do. All right.
not to make
MDC. MDC guys, MDC. All right, let's do this.
So. Poser, while we are here, let's go ahead and extend an olive branch out here. Because while we do hate each other for the next week, honestly, we do have the common ground of disliking A&M. And disliking is a soft word for it. Am I correct? So what is your favorite new story about having to play A&M? And also, if you have any questions as an LSU fan having a new adopted younger brother, we are here to answer them, you know, because we know there's a lot to question there.
I feel like we traded. Like, they joined the conference and they looked around for someone else to dominate them and they found us. And I don't know, like, do they treat every win over you like they just won the Super Bowl? I mean, I know they're kind of rare, so they should celebrate them that much.
They treat finding $10 on the ground like they just won the Super Bowl.
I mean, it took them 7 tries, and I'm really proud of them. And it, you know, took a couple of egregious calls and 7 overtimes. But hey, good for them. They won once. I put it on your cups.
And on top of that, they're going to go ahead and say, hey, we actually lead the series if you go ahead and shrink the data size down to 1 year or whatever year range that they want to fit their narrative.
They're still mad about the fact that we used to play, you know, in the 80s and 90s. And that LSU canceled the series in the early 90s because LSU was terrible. So they're still mad about that. And I think I've heard A&M fans complaining that we still owe them money for the games. So I think that's peak Texas A&M.
No, what's peak Texas A&M is trying to get a what is it, Joe? That fund, that oil fund to get to play the game?
The permanent – oh, yeah. They want to tie billions of dollars of state politics and – educational endowment money to a 60-minute game of football. You know, logical stuff.
Well, hey, that's the important thing. You got to have football come first. Look, LSU, we cannot throw stones when it comes to putting football before education. we put rebuilding the stadium ahead of our library, which is leaking. And the funny thing is, this is not the first time that has happened in our history. That got one of our previous ADs fired back in the 50s. So we have a long, proud history of diverting funds from education to the football team.
proud history.
Proud. Hey, we invented the in-kind scholarship. It was illegal at the time. You're welcome.
Well, you know, while Texas might have maybe an educational edge, they also have that we make money off the backs of free labor edge as well.
Hey, if corruption bothers you, college football is not the sport for you.
You know, just turn a blind eye like most people do.
Yeah. See, LSU is a little bit different. We lean into the skid. We're just like, yeah, it's corrupt. What do you want us to do? Like,
y'all are the state of Louisiana in college football form.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we still do things because Huey Long did it.
Thank and, you. I was waiting for that name. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, our stadium was literally built with funds sent to Huey Long when he was governor to build dorms. And it's not his fault that the dorms were built in a horseshoe shape with a football field in the middle.
Right. Yeah. It's just design, you know, artistic license.
We just took a little bit of license there. So, yeah.
What is corruption if not art?
Yes. Yeah. At least we make it fun.
I will say my favorite part of the new Texas A&M LSU rivalry is Corey Raymond. I think him getting, you know, involved physically is probably the best part of this rivalry. And, it just happened, too. So it's all fresh in our minds as well.
Yeah, I think Kevin Falk was in the middle of that.
Kevin Falk, that's who I'm thinking of. Yeah, yeah, that's my favorite part of this rivalry.
Yeah, I was like, Kevin Falk. Yeah, way to get down there, Kevin. I didn't even know you were at the game.
No, he was definitely in the game. Yeah. But you know, we'll go ahead and swing this a little bit back to football. Kind of start on the big picture. You know, this is a very interesting out of conference game, no doubt. And in the playoff era, it's something that the committee has said that they value. They want to see these types of games, you know, stepping out of the comfort zone a little bit. Now, I know LSU went to Lambeau Field to play Wisconsin in recent years. I think they played one of the Jerry World, maybe season openers or something
played,
like that.
We played TCU. We played Oregon in 2011. Yes.
Right. So where does this game, I guess, in the past few years kind of rank as far as, you know, not only opponent, but location and just how much it affects the season? Where does this kind of rank as far as big out-of-conference games for LSU's recent history?
I think you hit the big thing right there is location. A lot of our big games out-of-conference early on have been at neutral sites. And even playing in Lambeau, where we did the sort of home-and-home with Wisconsin, it wasn't Camp Randall. And here we're going to Texas. We're going to play in DKR. We're going to play on campus stadium, and next year y'all are coming to Baton Rouge to play in Tiger Stadium. That makes it great. And also, these are two, you know, classic programs. These are two blue blood programs. Texas is, you know, one of the winningest programs in college football history, and we haven't played since a regular season game since 1954. And you know, we've played two Cotton Bowls since then, and that's unacceptable. I mean, Texas and LSU are neighbors, and we need to get the hate up a little bit. And it's fun to play this game. I think every Texas fan knows at least one LSU fan lives nearby. Every LSU fan at least has one Texas guy in the neighborhood. And I think it's that familiarity can bring a little bit of hate that the Wisconsin game couldn't really bring. So I think this is the biggest early season game LSU has played in, you know, 20 years.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I think this is a huge
game. You talked about location here. I mean, LSU is, you're saying next door neighbors, it's sort of Texas's extension of in Arkansas or, you know, Oklahoma in terms of how close it is and how big of a game it could be. LSU, I am sure, is going to travel well. And I've talked about that before you came on. But what we don't know here, we know that they're going to come, but we don't know is what it will look like in Austin. And you as an LSU fan and know the LSU crowd well. So how big of a presence should we expect and what should we expect from LSU fans?
Honestly, I don't know how big the crowd's going to be. I think there'll be a contingent. I think one thing that's going to hold it down is going to be the weather. It is supposed to be, you know, just hot as hell this weekend. Mm-hmm. And that's going to depress turnout a little bit. Also, it's not as exotic. You know, there's something to be said, like LSU, when we played Washington, we took over Seattle, because when is LSU ever going to go to Seattle again? Austin, great city. I love Austin to death, but we know Austin. It's pretty close to us. I mean, if you live in Louisiana, it's not that hard to make a trip there. So that might depress turnout a little bit. So I don't think you're going to see like the traveling horde that some other places have seen. But what you will get are just insane fans. LSU, we view yelling at you and screaming tiger bait at you at the top of our lungs as kind of a compliment, because what we want is to yell at you and for you to come to our tailgate and then we give you delicious food. It's weird, I know, but we view basically verbal assault is our form of greeting.
Interesting.
We mean well. We're not as harmful as you think. We're actually, as fans, fairly harmless, but we're going to drink a lot and we're going to yell a lot and probably profanely.
If you will, the roar is worse than the bite. Huh?
I think from fans, yeah. Yeah. I think from fans, we're not – I mean, I don't really – I'm sure there's always going to be some drunk, you know, asshole who's going to get in a fight. Mm-hmm. But – I'd like to think that we're going to represent ourselves better and not come into a really cool town like Austin. And also, I think it's going to be too hot to fight.
Well,
the roar is also pumped in and right by the visitor locker room as well.
Right. I guess one more question is, as an LSU fan and as an SEC guy, LSU is one of the only schools that really doesn't use the Palms.
No.
Thoughts? Yeah, why not? Do you hate the Palms as much as I do? And
well, we're not children. So I think that's one of the reasons, but I've never really given it much thought. I think it's just that, would you give us like things to destroy? That's just a bad idea. Someone's got to clean that up. Yeah, we're more just interacting with the band kind of thing. Like we all, we're more, this is also very A&M of us. the band has a song and we have a cheer based on that, you know, that song. So it's not like Tennessee, which only knows Rocky Top and that's it. The LSU band actually has a playbook, and that kind of determines how LSU fans will cheer.
Okay, okay. Do you have any College Game Day sign ideas?
No. Now that you think about it, I don't get up that early anymore. I'm old. I'm going to take advantage of coming to this game and not having my kids around. I'm going to sleep in and let you youngins take that.
I may take over and have some words about Texans management on my game day sign. But to go ahead and throw it, I guess, a little bit more towards football, big win over Georgia Southern, record-breaking win over Georgia Southern, especially for Joe Burrow. What are some of your, I guess, high-level takeaways from a beat down of an opponent y'all felt pretty good that y'all would beat down?
Yeah, it's hard to take away too much from essentially a traffic cone. I mean, people read way too much into these, you know, to the paycheck games. Then again, you could be Tennessee and you could have lost your paycheck game.
Or Missouri.
And that's just funny. Yeah. Well, Missouri was on the road, so that wasn't even a paycheck game. They traveled for that.
That's even worse.
traveled to Laramie to get an ass whipping.
Yeah. But I think for us, it's for years, LSU has promised we're changing the offense, we're changing the offense, we're changing the offense, and it's never happened. And so the fact that LSU actually did it, and, you know, Joe Burrow wasn't under center. I think he only had one play under center. They said they were going to go in 11 formation, and they were in the 11. They were in essentially a hurry up. There were times when the referee was standing over the ball and LSU was ready to snap the ball, and, you know, the refs wouldn't release the play. That's alien concepts for LSU fans. So it was nice to see that kind of stuff. It was promised, delivered. So at least they're going to be trying to do these things. But this is something I said on our own podcast, that everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. That's Mike Tyson, you know, great military strategist. We weren't punched in the face against Georgia Southern. Texas obviously is going to punch LSU in the face. And I want to see what LSU does when something goes wrong. Do they revert back to slowing the ball down and handing it off, you know, going run, run, pass, punt?
So I guess, what are your impressions of that new offense? Is it what you were hoping for? Is this new offense finally here? Assuming if they get punched in the face and they stick around with it?
I think it is. Joe Burrow, I think the light went on for him last year after the Georgia game. If you look at his numbers first half of last year and second half of last year, it's a radically different quarterback. He went from a guy who was just kind of keeping the lights on. He was the classic game manager that you expect out of LSU, to a guy who was really throwing it around by the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, we forget LSU put up 40 points in the Fiesta Bowl. That's not what we expect out of LSU. And for him to come in first game, only play a half, only have four incompletions, considering his biggest problem was accuracy, and he was dropping dimes out there. Even better, I think 14 different players had a catch. So this was a guy who was truly spreading the ball around. It wasn't just him locking into Justin Jefferson and throwing to his one guy. Those are the kind of things that were really encouraging for this offense, to see Burrow looks like he has progressed and he's fulfilling that promise. We'll see once he plays a much more active defense in Texas, but also just that he has options. There are just so many receiving options out there. He's not just, oh, he has two targets and, you know, look for those two guys. And if they're not open, well, you're in trouble.
So what, I guess, if there was anything, what didn't look right? What kind of looked off about the offense? Was there anything to that front, especially from the first string guys when they were in?
I mean, it was 42-3 at the half, so not a whole lot went wrong.
Right.
I would say if I'm looking for something, LSU only averaged 4 yards a carry. That's not good enough. And if you think 4 yards a carry against Georgia Southern, you know, if you know you do the translation against a Big 12 defense like Texas, it looks a lot worse. That's a concern. But a lot of it was the yards per carry went down in the second half. The starter, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire looked really good. He was closer to like 7 yards a carry. But I am concerned that there isn't really a go-to running back. This team, LSU is used to having a Leonard Fournette, a Darius Geis, a Jeremy Hill, a guy like that. And there just isn't one on this team. And that's weird for us. So I'm still nervous watching this team and saying, okay, chips are down. Who's the running back? Like, who, you know, who's the bell cow? And LSU doesn't really have one. They kind of, every running back kind of got a possession, and it felt like an audition. So I think that's the biggest concern.
So we're taking a look at this offense. We've got to get a view of it. Now let's go ahead and switch to the other side of the ball here. What should Texas expect out of this LSU defense? And what are the main features of this Dave Aranda defense that Texas fans are going to see this Saturday?
I think the strongest thing about this defense is its flexibility. He can throw multiple looks at you. Dave Aranda can. And the base is a 3-4, but a lot of times they kind of do that 3-3 of being in a nickel package. One of the key players, one of the guys who makes this go, I mean, outside of the star players, Jacoby Stevens is a free safety. He's a guy who's bounced all over the field. He played linebacker in the Georgia Southern game. So he's big, he's fast, he can play multiple positions, he gives you a lot of different looks, and it allows LSU to create matchup problems all over the field. Because this defense is one of its biggest strengths is it has so much linebacker depth. We lost Devin White to the NFL draft, but the number two tackle on the team last year was Jacob Phillips. And going into the game, Jacob Phillips wasn't even listed as a starter. He did end up leading the team in tackles, but that kind of goes to show just what kind of linebacker depth they had. This is the kind of team that can come at you in waves. He can kind of have different looks, saying he can go to a heavy package, he can go to a fast package, depending on what kind of look Texas is throwing at LSU. And that is the strength of this defense.
So Texas has run they ran a considerable amount of dime against Louisiana Tech and even broke out a few really exotic defensive packages. Is that something Dave Aranda does too? Does he flood the field with DBs, or is that something that kind of remains to be seen since it's not something their defense is asked to do extremely often?
They run a lot of nickel. The problem last year is that LSU ran out of defensive backs. Y'all were watching the game, but in the Fiesta Bowl, LSU only had five defensive backs dressed in the second half due to injuries and suspensions, and also Greedy Williams deciding he didn't want to play anymore. Against Texas A&M, I think the number was closer to like seven or eight. So LSU hasn't really been able to play a dime because there haven't been the bodies because of injuries and also some roster shortages from the previous administration. This year, we don't know because Georgia Southern rarely throws the ball. So LSU was able to go run heavy. Aranda didn't really put out his third cornerback. Kerry Vincent, who's listed as a starter in the media guide, would barely even played because there was never a time where they had to match up with a third wide receiver. So I think that remains to be seen, but I think the team won't go much beyond a nickel, but you will see the nickel look a lot.
So where exactly do you think Texas has an advantage over this LSU team from what you've seen against Texas in Louisiana Tech or Georgia?
Well, I was going to say going to this was the running game, but man, just everybody got injured.
Yep. Yeah, we know. It's a curse. The curse of Kirk Johnson.
Like that I thought was going to be Texas's leverage. And that's, I mean, I don't want to say that I'm unhappy about injuries, but I am. I wanted to see Texas at their best. And I thought that was LSU's biggest weakness going into the Texas game was going to be how are they going to match up with a really strong running team. And then also there's the fact that Ellinger is one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the country. And a guy like that is the great equalizer. I think LSU has the better roster, and I think this could be one of the best LSU defenses we've ever seen. It has that kind of potential. But Sam Ellinger could be a Heisman finalist if he fulfills his potential. And when you have a guy like that, you can win any game because great quarterbacks make great teams.
Well, I'm interested in, you know, your thoughts on this defense, right? You said it's the best defense, but you don't really talk about the linemen there. How do you feel about this defensive line for LSU? Because when I'm looking at, you know, the linebackers and the defensive backs, these names pop off the sheet for me, but not so much on the line, besides K'Lavon Chaisson.
Well, yeah, Kalevon Chaisson, who missed all of last year with a knee injury, is our preeminent rush linebacker.
And shit talker.
And yeah, he is a shit talker, but I kind of like the fact he's shit talking. I mean, what? Is the game going to get any bigger?
You're just not going to get very much from Texas. They try to rein them in real hard on that.
Yeah. And like Texas is wearing the DBU shirt, and I appreciate that. There should be some back and forth. But LSU was really missing that big pass rusher last year, and Chaisson fills that void. As much as Devin White was a huge star last year and Grant Delpit emerged, Chaisson was supposed to be the star player last year, and he got injured in the Miami game and was out for the season. So him coming back is a huge thing for LSU because that's a 10-plus sack guy that LSU sorely missed last year. Also on the line, Rashard Lawrence is a preseason All-American. He's like third team. He's not like a first team All-American. He's a senior, which is rare for LSU to have a guy stick around that long. He's kind of the rock of the defense. Also, the nose tackles are just ridiculous. They're young, but ridiculously deep. Tyler Shelvin played a lot last year. He had a couple of starts behind him. Ika is a true freshman. He comes in as one of our biggest recruits. These are the two guys that LSU is really counting on in the middle. And the defensive line is honestly, because you're in a 3-4, they don't rack up big numbers, but everything starts with the line. And it's the anchor of the team, even though they're not the guys who are going to get the pub, except for a little bit for Rashard Lawrence.
So I guess the last question I got, kind of the opposite. Where do you think LSU, if they've got multiple, where do you think they have the biggest advantage, or where do you think the main advantage for LSU is over the Longhorns?
I think LSU's biggest advantage is that Texas is going to want to throw the ball because of Ellinger, and that goes directly into LSU's biggest strength, its defensive backfield. We are no strangers to great defensive backfields at LSU. You aren't strangers to it either at Texas. This has the potential to be the best defensive backfield in LSU history. Grant Delpit is going to be a finalist for the Bednarik Award. Forget the Thorpe Award. He might win the best defensive player. I already mentioned Jacoby Stevens, who I think is the guy who makes the defense go. You bring in super recruit Derek Stingley as one of the cornerbacks, and Christian Fulton grades out as a first-round draft pick as the other corner. That is a tremendous starting lineup. And also, there's a lot of depth. Todd Harris started last year, and he's not going to start this year. The freshmen have really come on. Cordell Flott is one of the reasons that we had Kelvin Joseph go into the transfer portal right before the season started. Ellinger is a great player, but it's going to be strength on strength. And I think that favors LSU because this is what we want teams to be doing to us. We want teams to attack us with the pass. We're built for that. And that's kind of rare for SEC defense because you tend to think of them as run, 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 run. But teams have gone away from that in the past 5 years. LSU has kind of been the straggler.
So last question we have here, it's for everyone. What are your predictions for the game? Give me a score. Give me a thoughts. You know, is it rain? Does it rain a little bit? What's the coin flip? Give me some flavor here.
Okay, I'm just going to get the hate mail. I think this is a great LSU team. Last year, LSU returned almost no starters. It was one of the weakest returning rosters LSU had ever had. At least in the past 10 or 15 years, and they won 10 games, admittedly against kind of a soft schedule. This year they return, if you look at the SB Nation charts on returning production, they return more production than almost any team in the country, and it's elite-level production. You throw in a fact that they might actually have an offense this year. I think LSU is going to score about 30 points on Texas. And I even think Texas is a really good defense. I think that's just a function that I think LSU is a championship caliber team. And Texas, I think, is just a very good team. That's a borderline top 10 team. So I'm thinking around like 31-24, LSU will have a lead and hold on to it late.
Wow. You almost got my score. My score is 31-28 for LSU. So just so that Texas can just get that cover
Hit the number. Yeah,
or just under it. Maybe somewhere around, hey, 28-31 or something along those lines, where Texas still keeps the, you know, Tom Herman just goes under the hey, he covers line, but I don't think LSU just has a lot going for it right now. Texas has some question marks, especially in the cornerback position and in the running back position and even the middle linebacker position, that I'm not quite confident enough to say, hey, Texas beats LSU here. Now, the one place where Texas does have an advantage is, as I talked about before you came on, was Joe Burrow is a pocket passer. He can run a little bit, but Texas does very well against pro style. So that's where Texas might have the advantage, I believe. And if they do win, it's by making Joe Burrow ineffective. That's the way I see Texas winning it, but I do think that Sam Ellinger going against his defensive backfield, he hasn't shown consistency enough in the first 2 weeks of the season for me to say, okay, I think he can do it.
I walked off of Bourbon Street on January 2nd thinking that Texas was going to beat LSU. Since that time, I still think that. I think this is a pretty, you know, evenly talented team both ways. That granted, there are some places where LSU has a much stronger, you know, advantage, and some places where Texas has a stronger advantage. But I think kind of overall, I think a lot of things are pretty equal. And with that in mind, I think it's going to come down to coaching. It's going to be Tom Herman versus Dave Aranda. It's going to be Steve Ensminger versus Todd Orlando. And I think those are two really interesting battles. I think Herman, you know, he should be able to get a little bit out of Aranda. I think Orlando can do well on this defense to stop an offense that he's used to seeing in this conference. I just really think that Texas has, you know, the slightest of advantages coaching wise, along with the home field advantage, along with, you know, Tom Herman's, you know, track record as an underdog. All those elements thrown together are what have me thinking that Texas still wins a close one, about 28-21, something like that.
Steven, last question I have for you, and this is the last one.
Okay.
Do you understand what Ed Orgeron says? Like, and what percentage of what he says do you really understand?
He's the only coach who talks normal. What are you talking about? Look, we had Les Miles, who could mangle any English sentence like you could not believe. So Ed's actually kind of a relief. I will say that when he got hired, I was not a fan of the hire. I thought that was kind of a cop out, that they were settling. And Ed has really turned me around. He ever since the Troy loss, which I think was a devastating moment for this program, instead of that being the collapse moment, that was instead the point where, like, okay, this is how we're going to change things. This is what I want to actually do. And since that point, he has been an entirely different coach, and this has been an entirely different program. And so he can rah, 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 rah as much as he wants, because he has done a fantastic job and a much better job than I think anyone had any reason to expect when he got hired.
I'm pretty sure he's a toad in a man suit, but
it's very possible. It's very possible, but it's
one smart toad. No,
he's a good football coach. That's for sure. But hey, Steven, thank you so much for hanging out with us. You want to let us know where we can find you and your work?
I write on the SB Nation LSU site and thevalleyshook.com. You can also find me on Twitter at ATVS Poser. That's POSEUR. And I will be making fun of Texas all week because, you know, we're going to be rivals and I like to stir the pot. But I do generally respect y'all's program, and I think it's gonna be a great game. I have tickets. I'm looking forward to it. So this is what makes college football great, this kind of matchup. And I'm so looking forward to you guys coming to Baton Rouge and having the best time of your lives next year. And honestly, I think next year is when you're going to match up better, because you have a lot of youth this year and it's all returning. I am terrified of the Texas Longhorns next season.
Would you look at that? So he just said what I led into him with. But again, hey, Steven, thank you for hanging out with us. It's a pleasure talking to you. We hope to have you back next year.
I had fun.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that has been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or Texas.TheFootballBrainiacs.com. Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89, or you can find me on InsideTexas.com.
Well, you guys can find both of us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play. Anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you will find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.